Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I got myself some Batman action going on today.
Yeah, you were Batman.
I was Batman.
Yeah, you were.
I was Batman so hard, it was great.
Oh, Batman's so good. It's taken over my life. I need to be done with it, but it's just so good.
So I thought you were done with it.
Okay, I finished the main quest, quote unquote. The main quest. No spoilers. Except for maybe the first hour, in which that is the sort of where we are both at that point. But
yeah, I think I've played like an hour or so now.
Mm-hmm. So. The main quest being obviously just the main storyline, and then there's a lot of side stuff in Arkham Knight, and you get the quote unquote ending to the main quest, and then you have the ability to get another ending after completing like 100%, right? Which is the case in a lot of games. Hmm.
Two endings?
It's not really two endings. I'd more consider it like ending. It is. You don't get credits when you finish the main story. So,
I see. Wait, you don't get credits when you have to get 100% to get the credits?
Well, I mean, if you really want to, you can go into the settings and watch the credits after you finish the main quest, if that's what you're hoping for. Like, if that's what you need to move on from the world of Arkham Knight, maybe that's what I should do, considering how much this is. I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying that you get the ending once you've completed either 100% or other things. You can initiate the ending before getting 100% if you really don't want to collect all of the trophies.
I see.
And again,
so does that mean that there's one specific quest then that's kind of tied to the ending?
Well, there's the main quest, and that main quest is the main storyline, whereas all the other ones are sort of the side stuff. You know, the main, as you know, in the main sort of crux of Arkham Knight is that. Gotham.
Wait, do I know it? Hang on.
It's the first 15 minutes. Gotham's been evacuated.
Okay. Yes, okay.
And you are sort of left to your whim with all these bad people left in Gotham. For some reason, there's a lot of bad people.
Totally ran over just everywhere. It was just like splish.
Yeah. Oh.
That was that was just me spreading bodies over the pavement with my Batmobile.
Yeah, splish.
That sound effect
was. So hot. Splish. Yeah. How do you feel about the Batmobile? You like it?
No.
Ah, man. What? Okay, why? I want to talk to somebody who hates it.
And I think the reason the Batmobile threw me so off, first of all, the first time, and I don't know because I've only done it once, but the first time you jump into it and, like, summon it, that, like, animation of, like, falling to the ground and jumping in the Batmobile and then it kind of spinning around to see the tire and stuff, made me feel so badass. Does it do that every time?
Well, yeah, not like the cinematic. Oh, here's the wheel, but when you call that Batmobile in, it's dynamic. So sometimes it'll just like come up to you and you'll like, hey, I'm just gonna get in the Batmobile now. And other times,
I'm gonna use my little hook thing and get all the way to the top of a building every single time, just so I can dive bomb into it.
Yeah, you could do that. And other times. The vehicle will come at you so fast, run a couple dudes over, which is great because you get to see it, and then the thing will like peel and like, and you just like, oh, I'm gonna hop in the Batmobile and just whoosh, and dive in like side jump. It's so epic. Now I played 40 hours of this game before finding the setting, so I feel like I'm gonna give you a little a hot tip here. Go into the settings, change the controls for the Batmobile to be toggle. As opposed to hold. So I don't know how much tank stuff you've done, but you have to hold down the left trigger to stay in tank mode and then shoot. So you're like multitasking, right?
Oh, okay. No, I haven't had to do that yet.
So that's spoilers.
The only thing I've had to do is I had to follow a dude that was getting away, and it was all weavy.
Oh.
And that was kind of tough. Mm-hmm. And then you had to like lock on and then like hit the circle button at exactly the right time. And then you shot a missile rocket thing.
The early part of Arkham Knight is very Batmobile heavy. And once you get through the first, again, I hate making this caveat, and it feels like I got to do it a lot. The Witcher 3 is great. Just get through the first 2 hours, and then you're going to love it. And it's like, 2 hours, Ryan? Really? Like, I could go play Smite for 2 hours and accomplish more.
So much more.
Than Geralt could, than good old Jerry over here could in 2 hours. But I have to say, like, the first few hours of Arkham Knight are very Batmobile heavy, and then afterwards, it just becomes this extra thing. It's more of a side thing.
Even then, like, maybe I just haven't gone far enough to feel like it's too much Batmobile. Like, the Batmobile was enjoyable enough. Like, it was a little bit hard to steer. I find the same issue with Batman that I find with all PlayStation games, because I'm not familiar with the controls. Telling me what button to push is like itty bitty, wait, like teeny tiny in the little bottom corner. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, wait, what button is that? And by the time I figure out what the controls are and what the button is, it's like way too late. And I've already like crashed into the subway stairs.
Yeah. And I admit it took me a while to get used to the Batmobile's a new beast. And these but yeah, Batman
like I
said, games.
I still like it.
Yeah,
I did. Like, it was an enjoyable car chase, and there aren't very many times in a video game I can say that I enjoyed the vehicle, whatever it was. Like, the horse in Red Dead, the cars in L.A. Noire, like, any of it. Except for, like, a straight-on, like, racing game, like, you know, Need for Speed or Mario Kart or something. Like, those vehicle mechanics, because that's all they do. Mm-hmm. But any time that there's, like, a vehicle in a video game, normally I'm just like, God damn it, this is terrible.
Well, I agree with you. Most of the time it's tacked on. Like GTA, it's sometimes fun to drive, but not fun to drive when you're going to drive like across the map. It's much more fun to fast travel. Same with Skyrim. Like Skyrim, it was fun to like, oh, I'm going to take a horse across this map. It's like, no, I'm going to fast travel. And there's no fast travel in Batman, you know? Which surprising.
I like, because I really enjoy doing the whole, like, I'm super badass swinging across the map thing. I always have. That's one of my favorite things in Batman.
Yeah.
And actually, Batman is the first game on the PlayStation, not counting the vehicle stuff, but it's the first game so far on the PlayStation that I've just sat down and everything has just flowed, and it's really felt like the previous games. The controls were easy. It just, you know, and I mean, like, I've played... Well, the big titles, The Order, The Witcher, and then this one. Mm-hmm. And this one, I sat down and like I was able to do the glide and the rappelling and the, you know, just everything was like super. The combat was super easy, and even the combat is pretty much the same as the Xbox controller. All the buttons do the same thing. It's just that, you know, like I have to think, you know, like instead of Y, it's like triangle. Mm-hmm. But the top button is the same motion. So it's not totally remapped. So when I got into combat, I just started pushing buttons. I wasn't even paying attention to what it was telling me, and I was kicking ass. And I was just like, oh, man, this is what I needed out of a PlayStation game to get me into the PS4. I needed something that I could just sit down, that I already knew basically what the buttons did, and I could just jump right in order to learn like the PlayStation words for all the buttons. I loved Batman so far, and like I say, I've only played the first like hour of it, but man, it's so good. The graphics look amazing, because this is my first next gen Batman. The graphics look fantastic. Like, I just love it so far. Awesome. I mean, The Witcher was okay, but Batman, I'm just like, I'm probably not going to play on my PC for the next like week. I don't even care.
It's so good. Batman Arkham Knight is great. The story is fantastic. The side stuff, while some people have said the side stuff's meh, I thought the side stuff was really good. The open world side stuff, like the take over 13 towers, destroy 15 bombs, shut down 12 militia places. And it's like, that is open world, you know, crap. It's not. Yeah. It's fun because it's Batman combat and it's Batman Predator gameplay and it's Batman Batmobile stuff, but it's still open world filler, right? Mm-hmm. It's the other stuff, like the other missions that involve the villains, that that side stuff that really makes the open world fun. And the story is really cool. And again, like we said last week, you can focus on the story mission because of that urgency if you feel the need to, without worrying that you're, oh, I should really check on this person here, but actually I should go save this person because they're going to be killed if I don't go there right away. You can go do that and then come back to that other stuff. The game doesn't punish you in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not gonna run into that issue. But the issue you will run into is this game eventually taking all your free time. And then you finally get to the point where the last thing you need to do is find 40 Riddler trophies. And if you're going to find the Riddler trophies, don't feel guilty about using a guide, because those...
Because that's what you've done?
Yeah, here, like, you I can show everybody. No, I have my iPad here on my handy stand, and I just have my map up. I don't use like, the walkthrough to actually tell me how to do things. I just have the map up to show me where they are.
Isn't there a way, because in previous Batman games, you could, like, beat up the dudes that were green, and they would, like, drop maps of areas and stuff?
Yeah, but
is that not a thing in Arkham Knight, or are you just lazy?
No. It's half. It's a little from column A, a little from column B. So there are points in the map where there are buildings that have sets of these Riddler stuff in them. And the problem is that you can't beat guys up to show you where the trophies and stuff are in those buildings. So I'm sitting there in this new building thinking, oh, where are all these trophies? Like, and there's none on the map. But it tells me that there's 16 trophies, 2 riddles, 10 destructibles, and a bunch of other crap. I'm like, I don't want to... I'm already spending, like... I've already put 45 hours into this. It's going to take me another 30 hours to find the 243 Riddler challenges. And I just want to finish it so I can move on and continue to kick Kearney's butt, who I am winning in the leaderboard right now on Steam.
Are you?
He's calling me lazy in the chat room. I'm not going to let that fly. He's the one that shouldn't be watching this show. He should be going working on those Predator missions, because he's behind. But yeah, anyways, I'm using a guide, and I think anybody who has tried to collect those Riddler trophies, did you do it in City? Because I didn't do it in City.
I did it in City. I didn't get every single one of them, but I got down to the last, like, 4 or 5.
Do you remember how terrible that was?
Yes. Okay. There were a couple that made me just want to throw my controller.
Exactly. And
I'm trying to think. There was a couple that were, like, you had to, like, navigate the Batarang, maybe? I'm trying to think. There was some fly thing that you had that you could kind of navigate, and you had to go, like, through a vent, and it was like you had to go down and then like up and over and around and back to get to the Riddler trophy, and the corners, like the whole thing was like this big, and then whatever you're trying to navigate through was like this big, and all the corners were super 90 degree angle sharp turns, and I would get like all the way to the end and like just barely knock the last corner, and then you have to start all over again.
Yeah. Are you any good at finding
the remote Batarang? Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Are you any good at finding the riddles? Like, it tells you, like, oh, this person split in two, but really it's a thing you gotta do, and then you gotta find the thing that unlocks that, and you have to scan the stupid shit.
I like those. Oh, yeah, okay. Those were my favorites. I preferred stuff like that where you had to like solve a riddle than I did just the can you hit the buttons in the exact right order and timing and stuff like that. I like to use my brain more than my hands.
Yeah, it's just there's so many of them, and I'm actually having fun using it's like a treasure map, you know. And if I'm gonna like grind to find to like fly over the city for, I tried to do it. I literally did it for about an hour just flying over the city, and they don't pop. Like, they're just everybody's just normal blue. Nobody's, you know, glowing green. Nobody's been dipping their toes into the radioactive sludge.
Maybe you have to, like, actually kill off some of the bad guys to give them a chance to spawn new ones.
Maybe. I thought maybe it was, like, I had to find everything that was already shown before I could do it. But I'm just not I don't know. I'm having
so
more fun.
It's so much more likely that my video game mechanic works than yours. To maybe. Find everything? It's never that.
Well,
it's
no, you're right. Points. I should just kill everybody, and that'll teach the game to not give me what I want.
Well, when you put it that way.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a solid solution. I mean, if you kill all the bad guys in the game, they got to put more bad guys in, and what's the chances?
They can't just have an empty Arkham.
No, and they give us some more Riddler guys, and I love the combat so much that sometimes I will be like, oh, I don't have any riddles, and even using the map is tedious too, right? Because if you have no riddles on the map and you found all like half the stuff, and it tells you there's still like 30 more to find in that part of town, you got to fact check all those ones. So of course I'm going to fly around trying to find the Riddler guy. It was more so just for those like tight knit areas where you had to get in there and detective. I don't know, why am I defending myself? Let's see if you guys find all 240 without a guide. Get on it.
I'm totally going to do it now.
Are you? Better.
Just to prove you wrong.
Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Beat the game first, and then, because you won't be able to find everything until you've beaten the game.
Yeah, that's the way it always goes.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to seeing if you crack. Because if you don't, I'll be impressed. First admit. I'm not going to put anything on it, but I'll be impressed.
Well, see, Ashran sucks now, so I can actually play other games. So I'm going to be able to grind Batman like I was grinding Ashran.
Oh, no, we're not a WoW bashing podcast, Jocelyn.
No, we are not WoW bashing. I'm just saying Ashran's terrible.
Okay, it's just Ashran.
Everything else is fine. Everything else is fine, just not my cup of tea, but Ashran's.
I hear boats also suck. I heard someone say that.
Oh, did you?
I don't know, I heard that. I haven't been playing, but... Arkham Knight doesn't have boats, so
that's true.
Nor does it have PvP. Tanks. Yes, it does have tanks. Badass tanks. I just wanted to know, like, before we move on, like, how far are you? Like, what's the last thing you did in Batman? You're still in the Batmobile, kind of driving around?
I interrogated the driver of the car I blew up. So I did a little bit of traversal stuff because I had to get to the top of the police station to meet Gordon. And then obviously there's your cinematic, this is what's happening, here's the evacuation, all that kind of stuff. So I did that. I did some transversal to get to, or traversal to get to Gordon. Then I had to get to... the squad car that went missing, so I got to do a little bit of combat, and then I got in my Batmobile and did the high speed chase thing. So I kind of got to do a little bit of everything in that first like 45 minutes to an hour. So I like that. It's like basically I find that Batman has done the best job so far at taking the first like 30 to 45 minutes and saying, here's what our game is going to be. Do you like it, yay or nay? Like, we're going to have cinematics, you're going to have to fly around, you're going to see characters you know, you're going to have some hand-to-hand combat, and you're going to have to drive a Batmobile. Boom. Batman in a box.
Nailed it. And there's even more, too. Like, that's the basics, right? But the game continues to introduce new mechanics and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you think down the road. Because, again, once the story gets going, we're going to have some spoiler talks because there's some good stuff in there.
And I think we should be good. Like, I should be ready to do spoiler talks in probably 2 weeks, I would think. Depends on how crazy I get into the story and how amazing it is and how my push to Hearthstone goes. How my push to Legend goes in Hearthstone. Mm-hmm. Because I do really want to hit Legend before Nurtacular. So that gives me basically, like, 3 weeks to do that. So, but I should be able to get through it we probably don't want to do that live.
Hey everybody, we're doing a live show at Nerdtacular and we're gonna spoil Batman Arkham Knight.
If you haven't played Batman, get out.
The room just
empties. Yeah, so maybe the week before Nerdtacular we'll do some Arkham Knight spoilers.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
So what else have you been playing other than Arkham Knight? Because I know what I've been doing basically is Hearthstone. Those brawls are freaking amazing.
Oh, I haven't checked out the newest brawl. If it has deck building, I kind of shy away from it.
So much fun, though, dude.
The like, deck building I, portion of
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, what is it this week?
So the rules this week are every time you cast a spell, you get a random minion summoned to your side of the board that has the same cost as whatever the spell is that you played. So if you play, like, say, the coin for zero mana, you can get either a Wisp, which is a 1-1, or you can get the Training Dummy, which is a 0-2 with Taunt. If you play, like, say, a 10-mana spell, like Pyroblast in a mage deck, then you get Deathwing, because he's the 10-mana minion. Or I think there's, like, a couple of giants that could potentially pop out. But anyways, point is, whatever the mana cost of your spell, you get that minion or a random minion of that cost on your side. So basically, you just go in, you build a deck of 30 spells. I tried it first with Warlock, and I didn't have enough spells to fill out the deck, so I filled it in with minions for the rest of it. And it worked okay, but Mage was super, super fun. That was pretty easy. I beat Garrett really handily. but yeah, we tried to kind of mix it up and do all the different classes, and it was a lot of fun. It's like so good.
Let's check it out.
I should. It's super easy because it's not really deck building. It's like basically you're throwing in as many spells as you possibly can while still factoring in that you might potentially want a minion or two. You know, you might want the ability to heal or to draw cards or something. So
interesting. Well, I'll check it out. I keep meaning to check out the ones where you don't have to deck build, but I wanted to, what was it, the web spinner one? I wanted to try that. Yeah, and I missed it. It would have been great having Hearthstone or a smaller game to sort of break up the eye bleeding that was finding Riddler challenges. You know, once you found the Riddler challenge, it was fine. But, you know, finding them, oof, another story. But I did break it up with a smaller game called Polybridge, which I did a short video on.
I was going to say, I think I saw either you or James tweet out about this game.
Yeah, it's actually funny because James had done a video. I posted my video in the chat, and he had done a video as well, and it was sort of like, here's the first 20 minutes, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to, like, duplicate what he's done, even though there are tons of videos out there, but, you know, James is a good friend. Why would I do that? Plus, he's got more views than I do, so why would I do that to myself? So I just said, hey, you know, like, I'll grab your part of the video, sandwich a clip in and plug it in the middle of mine, and then go a little further than he did. So that's the video there. And spoiler alert, James is British, so like there's going to be like a really good entertaining 2-minute clip in mine, and then the rest is just a Canadian talking about building bridges. So Polybridge
is that, like, what you're doing? It's like Bridge Simulator?
Yeah. Do you remember, I have these vivid memories of elementary school computer lab playing these like Flash games.
Oh, no, that's not what I thought you were going to say. I was picturing like, do you remember like science fairs or like team building where they used to say like you have to build a bridge in like 2 hours and you get like 10 pieces of paper and like 2 pipe cleaners and
that kind of stuff.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Kind of stuff? Yeah, that's where I thought you were going.
But now that you mention that, like maybe that's the vivid memories I'm having, because I do remember in like grade 4 or 5, there was like, all right, who can build a bridge that spans these 2 desks and have it hold the most weight? And we'd build this bridge and, you know, popsicle sticks and pipe glue, like you said.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and you'd put as much in there, and then whoever won got like a whatever was popular. I don't know, like a hoop, hula hoop. I don't know. I'm not that old. But
are you 90?
Yeah, I was from, you know.
When I was in grade 4, I played with hula hoops.
Back in my day, I went to a small town school. All we had were, although we had a computer lab. The toys they gave out were hula hoops.
You're hurting your own argument here.
I know. That's like the gamers in hurting your own argument since 2000, whatever, when we started. But Polybridge is a physics-based puzzle game where you have to basically not only bridge the gap, but get the vehicles from the left to the right. So there's some basic levels where you're literally just building a bridge. You've got road and wood and a little a piece of support underneath. You know, you put your road across, you build your beam, put some triangles in there, bam, you got a bridge. And that sucker's just going across, no problem. And then as you get going, you know, you have to build drawbridges. So, okay, you add hydraulics. So then in the middle, like a boat goes through, and then the thing comes down and the car goes across. Pretty simple. But then further on in the levels, you're building like full-on jumps. And Scooter McGavin, as I have coined him, would go off this jump and just fly across the chasm. It's like, I don't really know how that's a bridge. It's kind of a one-way bridge because there's just a giant jump on the left side. But it's a lot of fun. I think it's in Steam Early Access right now, and it's like $12 or $13 Canadian, so it's probably like $10 American. And it just reminds me of these like little physics-based puzzlers that you would play like on lunch break, you know, in the computer lab. That's what it reminded me of. I don't know why.
Okay, on my lunch break, I wasn't playing physics games in the computer lab.
Well, I maybe that was like high school. I don't know. What were you? I don't know what people would do at lunch break. I don't know. Eat lunch and talk or go like
play where sports?
I
was.
Sports? I don't know if people played sports when
you
I
didn't
was,
sport. I sported.
I didn't sport, but I don't think people played sport on lunch.
What?
No, I don't think they... I mean, occasionally there'd be like...
What terrible elementary school did you go to?
It was a Catholic school. Well, I'm just joking. That's a terrible joke. There was like a rugby pitch. People would occasionally like... This was high school, but in elementary school, of course there was... We didn't actually go on the computer lab during lunch at elementary school. They kicked you out of the school. Those teachers don't want to deal with all those brats. They'd kick you out and you'd go on the swings and you'd have jumping competitions, like try to get as high as you could and then jump. Stupid game. Many people sprain their ankles, but that has nothing to do with Poly Bridge. Unless you fall off into the water and hit your ankle in a weird way on the way down, that'd be bad. But no, I really dig the game, and it got super hard. Like, I actually had to end the video early because I just couldn't finish this level. It's just Ryan, like, having a hard time.
So just basically you rage quitting at the end?
No, I mean, not rage quitting, but it just got boring to watch me, like, create the bridge and then have the guy try to go over, and he doesn't go over. It's a puzzle game, right? So I kind of illustrate the basic mechanics, and then after that, it's like watching someone put together a puzzle, right? It's not entertaining until it's finished, you know? Because that's the cool thing, is watching the bridge actually work. And there's a pressure system too, right? So you can actually see where the vehicles are putting the most amount of pressure, and it's kind of like gambling, right? So it's like, okay, I've only got 8 pieces of wood. Let's hope this holds, and you're like watching it, like, oh my god, is it gonna make it? And it does, because I'm a master bridge builder, but it's a lot of
except
fun.
Except in level 12.
Except in level 12. But I mean, if anybody's looking for, like, a small, like, palate cleanser type game, and it's been a long time since you've played, like, a physics-based sort of bridge simulator. I can't remember the last time I played it.
The last time I played a bridge simulator.
It's like a fun bridge simulator. It's not like you're having to build it to code and there's zoning laws and stuff. You're putting some wood and some road down and you're making sure that thing is going to stand up for one vehicle. That's the other thing. It's like, it's got a 98% pressure weighting here, but I'm pretty sure I made the one car go over, so it's fine. It's like a small little car make it across, but man, a van follows up and that thing is kerploosh, you know?
So. Best sound effects ever tonight. Oh yeah. My god. <It's happening. laughs> On that note, Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. You can use the code TheGamersIn to upgrade to an SSD when you purchase a new gaming rig, so head on over to doghousesystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to our topic of the week this week, and that is getting paid to play games. So this basically comes from the story that PewDiePie, who is a YouTube commenter personality, he made $7 million off of YouTube last year. And we should say he has a bigger YouTube following than anyone else. He literally has the largest YouTube following at, like, not just in gaming, like, period. Bigger than, like, I don't know, Bieber. I know he's, like, the biggest on Twitter. I have no idea who the biggest YouTube person is, but...
Yeah, he's the number one YouTuber.
Yeah, he's the number one YouTube person. So... With the, I think he has 9 billion views on his videos on YouTube?
Yeah, it's pretty up there. Like, you can actually see he has 37 million subscribers, and I'm actually just pulling up his, he might not have those statistics available on his site, but he does reference 9 billion views last year. And I mean, even the video where he has a 6-minute response to all this backlash he got for when someone, not him, but someone talked about how he made $7 million. And that's got 3 million views on it. Him talking about him making money.
Yep.
And I watched some of his other videos. The only one that I've been able to tolerate is him actually just talking about him. I'm going to kill that dog.
Thank you.
Really, honestly, is it really that hard for whoever is out there right now to be like, no, no, don't play with the squeaky toy. Ryan's recording
any
something.
Any toy but the squeaky one.
Yeah, especially the one that makes the most amount of sounds. Like, little does everybody know, like, all of her other toys chewed to shit. Like, they don't make any sound except that one. It's freaking indestructible. Damn dollar store. Anyways, I can't watch PewDiePie's videos. I know a lot of people can, but this video where he talks about him making this amount of money is actually really well done. And someone had made the point of, like, someone who's like the king of YouTube, and YouTube's like kind of a terrible place. To be such a nice and well-composed guy is kind of awesome to see.
Well, I think that comes down to basically like your online personality versus like your actual real personality. A lot of people have made the exact same kind of comments about how professional people like Forzan are, considering the kind of stream. And actually, Amaz is the same way. They're both pro Hearthstone players. They're, you know, not YouTube streamers, Twitch streamers. And their streams, I mean, in Forzan's stream, anything goes. It's just like constant flow of ridiculousness in chat. He's got his donation set up to do that robot voice. So some of the stuff that gets said, like, is just, it's terrible. And he is just like an over-the-top, crazy, does drunken streams all the time type personality. But he sits down to cast Hearthstone, and he is professional. He knows what he's talking about. Like, he is really interesting and entertaining without being his stream personality. And Amaz is the same way. I cannot watch Amaz stream, but I love Amaz when he's casting. And it just comes down to the fact that, like, these guys know what they're doing. They're kind of, they're appealing to the people that they know are in their chat room. They're making their living by entertaining those people. And that's not necessarily who they are as people. And they have a professional side. You can't make $7 million without having a little bit of a professional side and a little bit of like marketing skill.
Yeah, and he's a one-man shop, right? I'm sure he has help, but I know that he mentions even in the video that he works really hard. Like, people calling him out for sitting on his butt yelling at a monitor, that's the part that you see. I mean, the part that you don't see is editing, publishing, writing. I'm sure he has to write a lot of stuff for his stuff, you know, coming up with ideas to begin with. And I just, yeah, I don't know why, why people are giving him a hard, oh, I know why people are giving him a hard time. The internet's an awful, awful place, but.
And you know what? Like, he's got, even if we go with, I don't know, half that number, say 4 billion views, $7 million on 4 billion views, like, doesn't really seem like a huge amount. Like, YouTube really doesn't pay their creators very well. If he's the number one YouTube guy with that many views and that's what he made, I'm kind of like, yeah. I actually thought that would be a lot higher. Means like he's not even getting a dollar for each subscriber that he has, let alone people who watch him without subscribing. Like, I don't know, that actually seems low to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why, like, people, I wouldn't be surprised if he launches, like, a Patreon, right? Because people aren't actively giving him money. They're watching his stuff, and he says right out, like, I have 9 billion views, there are ads on all my videos, what do you think happens when people watch videos with ads? I get compensation from YouTube. And a lot of people are saying, like, if you're an actor doing this much content generation, you're paid much more.
Oh yeah,
you know, for so sure. I'm surprised that he might have a Patreon. I again I don't know a lot about
oh my god, dude, you way Canadian that.
Hey,
I don't know a lot about
175 episodes. 175 episodes, cut me some slack. And it was actually an accident. I don't usually say that. I just found out that PewDiePie is spelled PewDiePie. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know a lot about this, but I do respect the fact that he came out there and he said, like, look, guys, like, this amount of money, like, I make it because I work hard. And I think people should be rewarded for working hard. You know, like, YouTube is a very hard system to crack, right? And views are really important. And if it takes 9 billion, that's a pretty crazy amount. I mean, I was not surprised that he made 7 million. Were you?
No, not at all. No.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not surprised anymore when people launch, like, Patreons. Like, they quit their jobs at IGN, launch a Patreon for their own thing, make $20,000, and then launch another Patreon to fund another portion of the business and get another $20,000. Like, the internet needs to realize that people are willing to spend money on things they enjoy. And could you just imagine, like, the terror of what would happen if he launched a Patreon? People would freak out even more, right? It's just weird.
Yeah. And so on the topic of getting paid to play games, I mean, like, that also takes us into the realm of the Twitch streamer, of, you know, the whole pro player, just everything. the whole idea of games as entertainment, like, because, okay, so today we had the huge, huge, huge DreamHack North America announcement. So they announced that DreamHack is coming to Austin, Texas next May. And the announcement trailer video, it's about 2 minutes long. And it just is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Like, BlizzCon was so huge and blew my mind. Like, the StarCraft stage at BlizzCon, DreamHack is like that on steroids. And I was just like, I'm watching this video and I'm like, oh my God. So I sent it to my mom. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, mom, just to give you an idea of how entertaining people find it, because she says to me all the time, she's like, wait, what do you mean? Like, so you, people pay you to talk about games and to watch you play them. Mm-hmm. Yes, mom. She's like, that is insane. So they don't play with you necessarily. I'm like, well, sometimes. But she's like, but they just sit there and just watch you. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, and then there's dollars. I'm like, yeah. So I sent this video to her and she watched it and she wrote me back and she's just like, wow. Just wow. And I was like, yeah, mom, like, video games are huge in entertainment now. Like, people are paying big money. There's big venues. It's huge. And the whole, just the esports world and getting paid to make video game related content, regardless of what realm you're in, whether you're, you know, podcasting, whether you're commentating or whether you're playing, there, it's a legitimate form of entertainment now. And there is so much untapped potential, I think. So I'm really looking forward to seeing people able to make a living like this. Like, I mean, obviously PewDiePie got in kind of ground floor and that's why he's so huge. But I'm looking forward to people being able to, you know, I don't know. I'm picturing, like, being 14, sitting in high school, saying to my guidance counselor, well, no, actually, I'm going to be a pro StarCraft player. See ya. And, like, that actually being a viable career path. Like, what do you want to do? I want to be a pro athlete and I want to be a pro gamer. And nobody looking at them any differently, you know?
Well, it's like, it probably at some point in maybe not our parents' lives, but our grandparents' lives, where someone their age in high school said, I want to be an actor. And, like, what? You're not going to be. Come on. There's, like, two people that act. Okay, maybe, yes. I'm not thinking that far back, but talk. Yeah, it's like, well, they're not even going to hear your voice. That's the best part. Like, why don't you, you know, go sing on the street? I don't know. Maybe I'm not thinking far back.
Ryan has no idea how, like, life prior to 1960 worked.
But you know what I mean? Like, there are these weird careers that nobody really, like, when I was a kid, a professional gamer was not really a thing.
No. Not at all.
Especially, like, watching, when you watched a video of a video game, it was on IGN or GameSpot, you know, and it was them being media. And now everybody's media. And I think that there's just so much room for entertainment in this sector that a lot of people can do what we're doing. And you mentioned surprising your mother. Like, when I talked to my family, like, when we were doing Extra Life, I was like, okay, I'm going to play video games for 24 hours for charity, and people are going to donate money for us to play video games. And everyone's like, that's just an excuse for you to play video games. Like, nobody's actually going to watch you. No one's going to donate. And then we raised, like, $2,000-$3,000 that year. That was our first year doing
it. That was our first year, yeah.
And it's at that point where people start taking you seriously. Like, at my wedding, like, me being a podcaster was a big thing, and people didn't really understand that, but the people close to me that were speaking to everyone understood, like, yeah, he's a podcaster and he has listeners. And you go and explain that to people, it's like, yeah, we have like 30 live listeners, and we have like 1,000 people or 200 people that download the show each week. Or no, I guess it would be 1,000 now. Or,
yeah, I was like, yeah, no, back in our first year of Extra Life, yeah, it would have been a couple hundred people.
Yeah, and that surprises people. And, you know, now we're doing taxes and saying we make money doing podcasting and stuff. It's weird. And it is weird. And there's a lot of room out there for it. And more people are jumping into it. And I don't think there's a ceiling on it, because people are starved for content. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's so much more interactive than anything else. Like, I mean, if I'm sitting there watching a TV show, I can yell at my TV all I want, but it's not going to change what the outcome of the episode is. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you can sit there and Twitch chat and be like, oh my God, no, Jocelyn, you're going to miss Lethal. And then I go, oh, wait, you know, thanks, Blood Anubis. And then I don't miss Lethal. And then I go up a rank on ladder, or, you know, like, somebody could let me know a shark is coming in depth. And there's just, there's so many different ways you can interact with and shape the content. And you can't do that with any other kind of entertainment medium, really. Unless you're going to sit down and actually play the game yourself. But then it comes in, then you get the whole personality thing that comes in, that people have specific streamers that they like to watch, or YouTube personalities that they like to watch just for that exact reason. Because of the personality, they might want to, they might agree with the person's opinion and want to see if they should buy the game, or they might just want to see them playing the game because they've played the game themselves, and they can look at that streamer and wait for the reactions of, you know, the jump scare that they know is coming, or you know, the stupid funny joke, be like, oh, did that guy laugh when I laughed? And it's like, you're creating this whole community of fans that are just so in tune with you as a person and you as a personality. It's just this entirely different experience than anything that you get in traditional media.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I was even going to say that, like, being an actor, breaking into the acting career is tough. But now with YouTube, I mean, you can start your career on YouTube and do shorts. You know, it doesn't even have to be about video games. You can make money making shorts. And with Patreon and Kickstarter, it's like you can literally do anything. You don't have to go to school for this stuff. Whereas when we were starting our higher educations, like, yeah, if you want to do this, you know, in software development was a little different. It was a little more developed, and you could go out, but you'd have to make it big, right? That's a tough cookie to crack on your own. But you kind of needed that education. But I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, in 10 years, there's going to be a university degree for, you know, streaming and YouTube building of content and podcasting.
It'll probably be some sort of, like, content creation that'll bring it all together. Video production, audio production, just to kind of, like, internet platforms, whatever they happen to be at the time. I'm sure YouTube's still going to be around. I'm sure Twitch is still going to be around, but you never know. But yeah, I agree. I'm sure that we're going to go that way, and it'll probably have a little bit of marketing in there too. So I think that pretty much does it for our episode this week. Do we have? Oh no, wait, never mind. We've got a tweeter in here. I almost missed that because I was just about to take a whole bunch of questions from the chat room. But we actually have a Twitter submitted question. Oh shoot, I think there was another one too.
Well, you dig that up, and I can read this one.
I can't remember if we got it in an email or a tweet. I think it might have been a tweet. But yeah, you can read the question.
So moving on, like, we had a discussion last week at the end of the show about moving on from WoW. Obviously, I've been pretty public in that I've done it for a while. And Jocelyn has just done that. But this came from Night Vale on Twitter in a couple separate tweets, so I've sort of combined them. But he says, I've unsubscribed from WoW and moved on. Still have about 2 months on my account, but I've only played 6.2 long enough to get the shipyard and realize it was more of the same. He has since now moved to Final Fantasy XIV and having a great time. Solid story told well, and you can literally play every class in the game on one character, and it's a little cheaper too. A lot of people have actually moved over to Final Fantasy XIV. I think we discussed that last week too, in that Josh has been playing it pretty hardcore, and Rem as well as a couple other peeps. And I played a bit of it. And I don't know, I think maybe just MMOs aren't my thing, but Final Fantasy XIV certainly has an appeal. I think the thing I didn't like about it is that it's very Japanese, and I'm not big on Final Fantasy.
I think that's probably the fourth time in the history of the podcast that you've said that. It's very Japanese.
but it is. There's, like, little animals running around, and they're making high-pitched sounds, and some of the enemy designs are great, and then other enemy designs are like little things with skirts. It's weird, right? I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea. But you know what? People love it. Leo is even saying in the chat room he's playing Final Fantasy XIV. Of course, Kearney is a big Final Fantasy XIV guy. I think he still raids in that game or something. But Night Vale is confirming, yes, it is very Japanese. But it works really well, which is great, because sometimes things are really Japanese and it's just like doesn't quite click. So it's nice to see that it is very Western, very friendly to Westerners. But yeah, I didn't experience much of the game. I've only hit about level 15. I'm terrible at MMOs. Maybe it's not that I don't like MMOs. I can't be tied down except by Batman. That sounds really weird. Should have let that one move on. You were moving on until I pointed out that it was really weird. I've been playing too much. I have these weird dreams. Don't write that down. Did you find the question? I'm not making it the show title.
Yes, you are.
Then I gotta find art for it, and I am not Googling that.
Oh, man. What I was going to say, it was a comment about MMOs. My problem with starting a new one, I've had the same problem with ESO and WildStar and everything that I've wanted to move on to, is that I've always still been so into WoW, and there's been so much content there. And I'm still into WoW. Even though 6.2 isn't what I wanted it to be, there's still so much old content that I haven't experienced that it's not like I'm running out of WoW content. And so where all my friends are still there, I find it really, really difficult. Like, I love the AIE community, so it's so hard for me to kind of leave that community and go somewhere else. Even though they tend to have a presence in each of the new MMOs, WoW is just so huge and has so much stuff to do. There's something for whatever mood I'm in that given day. For a while, it's been PvP, but, you know, like, I might get back into pet battles, whatever the case may be. Between the size of the game and the community, it's hard to move on to another MMO to start from scratch. Like, I mean, it took me a really long time to get a max level character. So, yeah, that's always been my barrier to entry of any other one, is I'm just like, but WoW, I've just put so much time and effort in, and all my friends are there. So I'm sure Final Fantasy is great. I think I've only ever played one before. It might have even been seven, but I'm not 100% sure. And I remember kind of being into it, but not really. I didn't get that far. I got to some battle and got stuck. And it was like, whichever one it was that I played, and I'm sure once I kind of describe it very vaguely, because I can barely remember it, it was on GameCube.
Oh, Crystal Chronicles?
Oh, that might be it. That rings a bell. It was like, I remember wandering through the woods, and it was the kind of thing where you can't actually see the monsters. It's all just completely random, and you just kind of walk around until all of a sudden you're thrown into a battle.
I loved.
And then it's turn-based. Yeah.
As a Nintendo person, I loved Crystal Chronicles because it was kind of like, I got to be all in because I don't have a Sony platform right now, so I kind of have to take what I can get. And Crystal Chronicles was one where you had your GameCube controller, but instead of everybody else having a GameCube controller, you all had Game Boy Advances, like, connected to your GameCube, which gave you a map. It was terrible. Like, it was totally a gimmick. But most people are probably wondering, like, oh, you're talking about Final Fantasy XIV, but you're not mentioning, like, Final Fantasy is weird. They are linear games in the sense that there is 1 through 14 with some spin-offs. But 14 is very different from 7, which is very different from 10. They all kind of throw out the mechanics and come back. It's still the same wacky story. But, you're with Final Fantasy 14, it is an MMO-based with a different story than, like, 7, which is more turn-based and stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
Leo in the chat room is correcting me and saying Crystal Chronicles wasn't turn-based. I might have the combat wrong. Like I say, I didn't play very much of it, and it would have been when I was in university, which would have been, like, 12 years ago. So, that's... Mm-hmm. It could be me completely remembering my 4 hours of gameplay wrong.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember a lot about the game.
I remember wandering through and getting in those random battles. And yeah, I don't like this.
Dragon Quest or Quest, or if it's third party on the GameCube, you know, there's not a lot to choose from, but there's also not a lot to remember because it's not very memorable, except for that Hobbit game, right?
Oh, that Hobbit game was so good. You know what else was really good? I played through it like 4 times. The Buffy game.
Yeah, I remember that was like one of our first conversations. And they're just like, what's your favorite game from the past? It's like, oh, Hobbit and Buffy. And I was like,
yeah.
I don't think I played either of those. But I could see like that being a game that you could really latch on to. But
I really liked the combat in that GameCube Buffy game.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even remember it. I don't remember that. I can picture the box art because I think I've seen it around, but I don't. It's like I don't really remember a lot about it. But yeah, MMOs.
I did end up finding that tweet. So the tweet came to us from Henry, who is Agent Gray on Twitter, who says, "Have you ever discussed on any podcast why you prefer Smite to Heroes of the Storm, if at all? Just curious about your preferences." So I don't actually think that we've ever talked about why we prefer Smite, or at least why I prefer Smite to Heroes. But for me, at least, it's kind of a combination. of the third-person view. I'm a really big fan of WoW PvP, as I've spoken about a bazillion times in the last couple of months, but I like being behind my character and just being a little bit more immersed in the environment. I find it so much more fun than that top-down kind of god view that you get in RTSs and MOBAs generally. I find it really, really difficult in Heroes to just get sucked into the game, like really, really want to play and do well. Whereas in Smite, like, I get so into that game and I get so either happy or frustrated. Like, you get the full range of emotions out of Smite. I don't get that in Heroes. And for me, the other thing in Heroes is there's, you know, like basically a tech tree of your skills. There's no items, but there's still the skill tech tree. Then there's like knowing which of your skills like combos well together, which you also have to do in Smite. But then there's also map objectives plus your normal like MOBA type mechanics where you have to like soak XP in your lanes and stuff. And then you have your team fights on top of that. And to me, it's just way, way too complicated. I find it just too difficult to remember everything that I need to remember. And people have said, like, I've tried doing the whole, like, okay, well, go look up a build. I look up a build and I have the build there, and so I'm picking my skills, but I have no concept of what I'm actually doing. And I just, I don't know. I just find Heroes too complicated without the love. Like Smite, I jumped in and I was having fun right from the beginning and it sucked me in. So it made learning all the other stuff really easy. But I think because there isn't really a way in Heroes to do like what we do in Assault, like in Assault, all you have to do is learn your gods because there is no jungle. There is one lane. It's just constant team fight. So you just have to learn your god and you have to fight the other team. It's really straightforward. There is no straightforward in Heroes. Every single map that you play has an objective, has something else you have to do on top of learn your character, on top of learn three lanes and a jungle and mercenaries and then map objectives. Like it's too much for me. I don't, what about you, Ryan?
I don't play I don't play a lot of multiplayer games, both because I only like to play multiplayer games with friends as opposed to randoms, and also I have minimal free time to actually play these multiplayer games, and that require, like, I find these multiplayer games require a lot of time to play them, and to really get good at them. So with Heroes, I find every time I play, I'm having fun. But I don't feel like I'm sort of progressing because I'm not playing it enough. I'm usually coming in just to have a couple matches and then jump out, and that's like every month or so. I did have a lot of fun playing Heroes, as Blood Anubis in the chat room is saying, like on TGI game nights when it was like a custom game of 5v5 and all of us just swapping teammates, and that was a lot of fun.
That's true, and I enjoy it as well when I'm playing in a full custom game with you know, people who I know are at my skill level and who aren't going to be crazy intensely competitive. Because that's the other thing that kills it for me is, I guess, when I started playing Smite, everyone else I was playing Smite with was at the exact same level that I was. We were all completely new. We just said, let's jump into this game mode and see what happens. Whereas in Heroes, even though I've been in since Alpha, I haven't been playing very much at all. And so I find everyone that I want to play with, like, I can't even play with most of my friends now because I think I'm at level 18 or 19, so I'm not even high enough to play in Hero League. So it was a little bit of air quote sarcasm eye roll there, sorry. Hero League that you unlock when you hit level 30, and basically that's like the ranked laddery kind of system. So all my friends are playing in that, and I can't. So I'm just like, well, now I can't even play with my friends, so I have to play with random people. I play with random people. They yell at me for being a noob, and I'm like, you're not in Hero League yet either, jerk.
Well, the barrier to entry in Heroes, and again, this is moving past gameplay and more onto the, like, the purchasing mechanic. With Smite, we purchase the God Pack, and I'm with you. I prefer Smite over Heroes, mainly on just the fact that I have a minimal amount of time to play these multiplayer games, and when given the choice, am I going to play Heroes or am I going to play Smite with the usual gang? It's probably going to be Smite because we have the God Pack. That's all gods unlocked. it auto-buys my stuff. I don't have to worry about that. Auto-buys, auto-levels, and I know noob mode, but that's how I have fun. And maybe eventually, okay, don't let Josh or Jimmy hear this, but maybe eventually I will learn to buy items. I will learn to level up myself. But until then, I am happy to keep the training wheels on because it means I'm having fun. But yeah. With heroes, it's like, oh, we're announcing a new hero, and here's a cool skin. And it's like, well, if I want to play that hero, it's going to cost me like $15, and then it's going to cost me another $10 for skins.
Which skins are cosmetic. You don't have to buy them, but...
True, but they look really cool, and when you compare the value in Smite to heroes... Now, mind you, heroes stuff looks really good, but I find in Smite, it looks really good too, and you can actually get right up in there and see it, and you see it more than you do in heroes. Mm-hmm. And again, it feels like now we're nitpicking, but... Money is an important factor when it comes to this stuff. And I think that when it comes to money, Smite is more worthwhile for me because I've already invested a bunch of stuff into it. And mm-hmm. and the base investment of $30 is nothing. You know, if you want all the gods and heroes of the storm, be prepared to have like a very high credit card bill because I think that's all the heroes too. Cost a lot.
Because the thing in Smite, in the meta, if the meta shifts, it's not a big deal because they had that hero bundle or god bundle where you get all of the gods forever for free. And so you have everything unlocked. If the meta shifts, you can shift with it. Mm-hmm. In heroes, I find, you know, I get really good at a character, I spend money on them, I play it, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Lili got nerfed, so now you have to play Rhaegar as a support character, and right. then it's just like, okay, well, now I have to spend another $10, and then, you know, okay, now I'm playing Rhaegar, and then, oh, wait, now, okay, Rhaegar is not good anymore because he got nerfed, so now you have to go play this other hero, and then you have to go spend money on that, and it's just, it makes it so much harder to switch as the meta does. Like, you have to spend so much money to keep up with the competitive side of the game that it's just, it's really intimidating and discouraging to the entry-level player, because I don't want to just say casual player, because there's always a chance that an entry-level player could get hardcore. And if it's too hard to go from entry to hardcore, you're going to have a hard time marketing your game.
Yeah, and Trill Root in the chat room saying you aren't meant to play every character in Heroes, and that's a valid point, but I'll counteract that with my valid point, which is maybe I want to. And Smite allows me to do that. And a lot of games allow me to do that. Like, even talking about... Evolve is a bad example because they had everything locked, a couple things locked behind a season pass paywall. But, you know, if I want to play Evolve, which is a 4-on-1 arena-based combat type thing, I can pick any hero I want. I can pick any monster I want as long as I own it. And it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's not going to cost a bunch of money to own all those monsters and heroes. Mm-hmm. And Smite is like throws that problem out the window. It's like, this is free to play, but we give you so many other opportunities to give us money that we'll give you this incredible value to allow you to have all the characters. And we even play a mode that encourages that. It's our favorite mode, which is Assault, right? It's just a single lane, and you randomly get a hero. And that's perfect, because I feel like I'm getting the most value out of that god pack. Mm-hmm. But it is a valid point to say you're not meant to play every character. And I think in Heroes, if we did find a character we really enjoyed and really buckled down and figured it out, we'd probably enjoy it as much as a lot mm-hmm. of other people. But that doesn't mean Heroes is a worse game than Smite. It just means we prefer Smite.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm not putting down anyone who enjoys Heroes. I'm not putting the game down. It's just it's not my cup of tea. And like I say, I still do enjoy it sometimes, and I wish I could get into it more. But at the moment, I'm just enjoying other things. So, thanks so much for sending in those questions, guys. I thought we were going to be short tonight, but we're actually running a little bit over, so we've got to move this along. So we'd like to thank our patron of the week this week. That is Jeffrey W. Thank you so much for your support. If you'd like to support us, you can go over to patreon.com/thegamersin. We have game night tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern time, which will be streamed over on my channel, which is twitch.tv/GISGamer. Mm-hmm. So you should check that out and follow me if you haven't already so you can get a notification when we go live. If you are a patron and you want to vote on what we're going to play tomorrow, there is a post up now, I believe. I got the notification earlier. We also wanted to mention that we are very close to our patron game of the month milestone. So what this means is you guys get to pick a game, any game. Ryan and I will buy it, we'll play it, and we'll talk about it on the show. So I'll probably stream it as well because, you know,
yeah.
Why not?
I'll probably record it. I mean, we plan to, like, the milestone goals are about the people, the listeners, as much as it more so than it is about us. So when you guys tell us, hey, I really think Jossam should play all the Friday Night at Freddy's games, including four, when it
you
comes
out. You just had
out.
To bring that up, eh? Sorry. Oh my God, there are four already?
Well, the fourth one's coming out in October, I believe. And then a movie, so we don't have to worry about that. So yeah, I think we're very
gonna
close.
It's going to be a movie?
Jeez. It's going to be a movie, of course. Paranormal Activity has ran its course. They need a new...
I guess so.
I was going to say something bad. They need a new thing to milk. So yeah, we're really close, and if you've ever wanted to force us to play games that we've normally shied away from, we have to own the platform. That is the only
yeah, I'm thing. Not gonna go buy an Xbox One, sorry guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't go do that, although it's mighty tempting.
But we both got PCs, obviously. We both mm-hmm. got PlayStations. I think that Ryan does have a Wii U, and if they announce some super cool Zelda bundle, then I'll have a Wii U. So, exactly. You know, we've got some options. But
Halo 5 is around the corner, so Xbox One will soon be entering the world of gamers in, probably before you know it.
There you go. So, yeah, again, that is patreon.com/thegamersin. So I think that does it for us tonight. Ryan, am I missing anything?
Sorry. I think that the only thing I'd mention is that Hardboiled Greg in the chat room was saying he votes Ark, and it's funny enough that Ark might be what we play tomorrow for game night.
It's downloading right... Well, not right now. I paused it for this show, but
yeah.
I was downloading it earlier.
Yeah. Also, Icon Master says you should get a Wii U, so...
Yeah, I want one, but now I'm at the point where I've waited so long that, I mean... I'm going to end up playing all the cool, fun Wii U games anyway. I should wait and see if they do something spectacular for Zelda or if it's worth totally skipping the Wii U entirely and seeing what they come out with whatever their... I can't remember what their code name is.
NX. And with
NX.
Their,
I thought it was X, but then I was like, that's stupid. Yeah,
with their past experience with their systems, you might even be able to take a gamble and think that the NX will be backwards compatible with Wii U games. So that's a strong possibility.
Yeah, so that's my plan in terms of Nintendo consoles. But if you'd like to visit us on the web, you can do so at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Into the Nexus, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/JocelynMoffitt. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about making a living as a gamer, you can do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.